All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus podcast. David, what do you have for us?
Article I saw yesterday on Fox News of not a pastor that's in our camp by any means, but a Seventh-day Adventist camp pastor that also worked for the Georgia Department of Public Health, and apparently the state of Georgia demanded him turn over sermon transcripts to see what he was teaching and preaching, and after listening or reading his transcripts, he was relieved of his position. And we talk about this all the time, about the coming, you know, policies that could happen here in America, and seemed like something that might be worth talking about.
All right, Todd Starnes, writer for Fox News.
Yep.
Think he's a Christian?
Yeah. I think he's a good old boy, Southern Baptist, you know, traditional.
Can they be saved?
Yeah, you know, I think they probably can.
Okay.
But, I mean, he's, you know, I think he probably eats a lot of fried chicken on Sundays and goes to a lot of potluck. I mean, he's that kind. I mean, I
heard him. Are you calling him fat?
He's a little big, yeah. I heard him speak once at a conference, and he doesn't overly impress me, and I think he's kind of over the top sometimes in some of his articles, but this one seems to be fairly straightforward on what happened. So,
yeah. All right, let's get started.
All right, so a lay minister who is suing the Georgia Department of Public Health for religious discrimination has been ordered by the state's attorney general to relinquish his sermons to the government, according to federal court documents. Please produce a copy of your sermon notes and or transcripts, Attorney General Samuel Olens wrote to attorneys representing Dr. Eric Walsh. Dr. Walsh said he will not comply with the request. No government has the right to require a pastor to turn over his sermons, Walsh said. I cannot and will not give up my sermons unless I am forced to do so. Walsh, a Seventh-day Adventist lay minister, had been hired in May 2014 by a district health director with the Georgia Department of Public Health. A week later, a government official asked him to submit copies of his sermons for review. He complied, and 2 days later, he was fired. His attorneys said the government was curious about sermons Dr. Walsh delivered on health, marriage, sexuality, world religions, science, and creationism. He also preached on what the Bible says regarding homosexuality. He has since filed a federal lawsuit charging state officials with engaging in religious discrimination. He was fired for something he said in a sermon, attorney Jeremy Dyes told me. If the government is allowed to fire someone over what he said in his sermons, they can come after any of us for our beliefs on anything. Dr. Walsh has assembled a powerhouse legal team comprised of Parks, Chesin, and Walbert, along with First Liberty Institute, one of the nation's most prominent religious liberty law firms. It's an incredible intrusion on the sanctity of the pulpit, Dice said. This is probably the most invasive reach into the pulpit by the state that I've ever seen. Neither the Attorney General nor his communication director responded to telephone calls or email correspondence. Dice said the government's request came as part of the process to build their case against his client. The request, he said, carries the same force of law as a subpoena. Pastors and rabbis across the country, especially in the state of Georgia, should be frightened that a state would demand all the sermon notes and transcripts of a pastor. This is unprecedented. It may be unprecedented, but is it illegal? I think it is wrong for a state to demand that a pastor turn over his sermons at any time, Dice said. It was wrong for the state to ask Dr. Walsh for his sermons as part of the job application and hiring process. It was wrong for them to turn around and fire him when they listened to those sermons. And it is wrong now for them to demand that he turn over all the sermons and sermon notes he ever produced going back to when he was 18 years old. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins condemned the state's demand, calling it an alarming display of government intrusion into the sanctity of church, pastors' study, and pulpit. This is something that I would have expected to see in a communist country, not America, Perkins told me. Government scrutiny of speech in the pulpit is unconstitutional and unconscionable. Mm-hmm. He called on Governor Nathan Deal, a Republican, to correct this egregious overreach of the state into church affairs. Dr. Walsh also gained the support of Amir Kaner, president of Truett McConnell University, a Christian school based in Cleveland, Georgia. A new era has come to our shores, a time where government finds it acceptable to suppress the freedom of religion, even to the extent of requesting a minister's sermons, Kaner said. As an ordained minister, I know that this is not merely an assault on the messenger, but on the very message of our sacred scriptures. Kaner, of course, correctly noted that the government seems to exclusively target one faith, biblical Christianity. What the government fails to recognize is that ministers of the gospel are not hirelings of the state, but ambassadors of our Lord, he said. Dr. Walsh was catapulted into the national spotlight when he was invited to deliver the 2014 commencement address at Pasadena City College in California. Walsh, who was then the director of the city's public health department, came under fierce scrutiny from LGBT activists and students after someone found online copies of his sermons. He backed out of the speaking engagement, but critics persisted, and he was forced to resign his post after reaching a financial settlement with the city. Shortly afterwards, he applied for the position in Georgia. The state of Georgia fired him for something he said in a sermon, Dice told me. It's almost like the state ransacking the pastor's study, trying to find evidence in a desperate attempt to justify their illegal behavior. Dice said the attorney general could ask a judge to enforce their request if Dr. Walsh still refused. He could face contempt of court. No one in America should want a pastor being held in contempt for refusing to give up one of his sermons to the state of Georgia, he said.
And that's it. Right? That's all there is. So let's go back to the beginning. So he's a lay minister who's suing the Georgia Department of Public Health for religious discrimination. So did the article say what his... Okay, is he going to be the director of the district health director with the state... The Georgia Department of Public Health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The district health director with the Georgia Department of Public Health. All right, so David, is that a conflict?
I don't think it is. We've had these conversations of the clerks and the magistrates that try to opt out of doing the gay marriage licenses and those sorts of things. I think that seems like a totally different situation because... They're working for a state that has tasked them with a job, and the state has said that's legal, so we want you to issue those licenses. This is a lay ministry. You know, it's not his occupation. He does it on the side. As long as he's not doing this at work or missing time at work in order to do his sermons, it seems like this would be a pretty clear-cut freedom of speech issue, in my mind.
Don't you think that others would see this as... How in the world can this be the director of all the citizens of the state of Georgia when he is so adamant that behavior is sinful? How can he direct a universal health department where...
I guess the question would be, is was it affecting the way he did his job? Was he going against company policy? Was he changing the message when he got in there, when they said, we want you to, this is our policy, this is what we say, and he was giving a biblical alternative instead. You know, maybe then we've got a conflict.
Well, I chuckled because, it appears like it was very short-lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hired him a week later. They asked him for sermons, and 2 days later he was fired. So he might have had 7 days to even
try and do his job. Yeah, a couple of those weren't even work days.
Add in the weekends, he had 9 days.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That is a typical argument that's given for this kind of separation of church and state. But as I was driving down Ramsey Street, I went past the health department.
Right.
And I noticed they had this huge, beautiful new digital sign.
Okay.
Okay. And so...
Is it working?
It's working.
Different than ours.
Yeah. So I was wondering who paid for that sign.
You did, John.
I paid for the sign, right?
You sure did.
And on the sign are advertised things that I would be opposed to as a believing Christian that would enhance and supply people with the ability to maintain a sexual lifestyle that keeps them from responsibility. And certainly the fact that that health department is engaged in activities and instruction in a way that would go against what I believe. And yet... I'm required to pay for that sign. And on that sign, as I drive by, you know, it says,
"What's an example?
Free condoms."
Oh, yeah, okay? Free condoms.
So I am effectively taking some of my time during the week and paying for them to display the fact that there are free condoms.
Not just there, the condoms also, John.
Right, and the condoms. So what we need to do is make sure...
We need to go get some.
Go ahead.
We need to understand that this is not a one-way street. Those people that are in business that are crying foul at this, they are using money from us to pay their own light bill, not just the health department light bill, but indeed their own home's light bill, because they get a salary from there to put food in their mouth. And so what we've got to start realizing in America is, because we live in a land of freedom, that this is a two-way street. But they want to make it a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with one-way streets is someone decides which way the street runs.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to act like no one decides which way the street runs. And we've got to start calling them on it.
Right, and then everybody has to support the direction that they've chosen for the street to go in.
Right. And if you don't, then your labels
ostracized and
you get fired.
But the problem is, the reality is, we've never had a discussion, a public open discussion, about which way the street should run. What we always are always fighting about is who's in control of the direction of the street. But what we're unwilling to do is to have a public forum and discussion about which way the street should run. And that's kind of politics in a nutshell.
Haven't we already had that discussion? And we lost it?
I really don't think we had the discussion, but we did lose it.
Okay.
Because we were unwilling to engage in it. We want to run to things like, and you know, and I understand, but like in Texas, instead of just assaulting the idea of abortion, we want to play an end around and do things like, well, if you're going to have to have an abortion, you have to follow all these criteria to try to shut down the abortion clinics. Which, in okay, I got it, but we put that under the guise of having a discussion about it when I don't really think we've had a discussion.
So we weren't at the table when that discussion was happening?
No, and I think that where that really was in the universities in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And we really gave up it was pretty apparent by the 70s that Christianity and its influence was no longer welcomed in the universities of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when we talk about free tuition and things that we know are going to cause a problem for the university system, I'm kind of for that. Because if it falls apart, then it can be rebuilt again from the ground up.
How do you see that causing a problem?
Well, if universities become unviable because people can't afford to attend and don't attend, then their power and their hold are going to be less.
Yeah, but the problem is that the universities that are going to become unviable are the Christian universities and the liberal arts schools first, because they're so dependent on it, and the only ones left will be the giant state universities that are even more influential. I think we may create a super monster by eliminating any kind of alternative in the college
and
level.
And what I think, as a possibility, I mean, I can't be predictive of this, but I think there might be an underground educational movement using things like the internet in the future, whereas all of that, you know, state the whole concept of I have to go get a 4-year degree from a state university or any university is going to be challenged.
Well, and I think in some circles, but I think in mainstream circles,
which
the narrative is, you got to go to college, you got to go to these universities.
Certainly, things like becoming a lawyer and a doctor and all those will have to be at those universities, but. Like things in my discipline with music and other stuff, the technology is reaching the point where. But, you know, just every time we have this conversation, they want to bring up the one side, but they're unwilling to bring, you know I'm funding this, right? You know, it's kind of like the dad, you know, the kid wants something and, you know, they don't realize that the money comes from the dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, I was at a conference last week up at Shepherd Seminary, and there was a session with David Gibbs and Dan Forrest, the lieutenant governor, and Paul Newby, the North Carolina Supreme Court Justice. And the question of the session was, how far can you go in the pulpit? You know, what can you say? And the lieutenant governor said, you can say whatever you want. You know, now he says you can't say if you're going to be in this church, you got to vote for this candidate. He said you can't do that, but you can take positions. You can take political positions, and Gibbs, of course, the lawyer says, you know, and if somebody comes and messes with you, call me and we'll come down to represent you. But you know, the idea is we should have freedom of speech in the pulpit. This myth of you can't talk politics in church, it's a myth. It's been perpetuated by the groups that's trying to shut people down. You know, it's an idea of trying to stop that conversation that John's talking about. And many people have bought into it, and it's, well, we can't talk about that. Religion and politics, we can't talk about that. Whereas we should be talking about how religion, our faith, affects the way we view our politics, rather than trying to separate things that aren't separate, because if we have a biblical worldview, then shouldn't that impact everything that we do?
So November 6th, Pastor, you can give your endorsement.
Yeah, that will not happen. That will not happen.
And I particularly think that it's really quite stupid to think that there's going to be any scenario in any kind of government or any kind of situation that the direction of the street is going is going to satisfy everybody in there. It's never going to happen. It's right. I mean, as long as sin's on the earth and people are on the earth and sin's on the earth... But what we have is we have these presentations of, if everybody would just get on board this idea, you know, this humanistic direction or glide path, then we would be able to build a society in which the streets can go in both directions and everybody would be happy and nobody would know it. It makes no sense. The real scope since the beginning of time is somebody has control of the direction of the street, and they usually do that through exercising power over those who don't.
And there's always a group on one side that thinks it's going the one direction, and there's always a group on the other side going, it's not going far enough in the other direction, you know? I mean, even with Obama in this unprecedented administration, there's still a collection of people out there that goes, this is not liberal enough. We need more. We need more, you know? I mean,
and then he's telling the other side, you're going toward the wrong path, you know?
Yeah, wrong side of history.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because I was thinking Hillary Clinton was as far left as you can get, but I was reminded yesterday that she's not as far left as you can get, that there are others that are on the other side of her.
Yeah, there are.
Which is just inconceivable.
It is.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bernie is vying for Secretary of the Treasury.
Oh, that'll go well. So we need a socialist in charge of our budget. That is going to be excellent.
Now think about that.
Yeah.
Think about, you know... the article was making particular reference to the fact that we've always had a Wall Streeter in there, someone who understood currency, someone who understood how the capitalism works in our nation, and now there's a tremendous push to get Bernie in that position. You know, so
we print monopoly money.
That'll cut the budget.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Cut our throats.
Yeah.
Well, is this a unique case, David?
Is there
handwriting on the wall?
Well, I think that there may be some handwriting. I mean, there was a case like this in Houston, Texas, a few years back. Remember, they elected a lesbian mayor down there in Houston.
Yeah.
Which Gibbs brought up in the session, and he said, "You know how the percentage of how did that woman get elected in Houston, Texas?" And he said, 7% of Houston citizens voted in that election.
Wow.
He said that's how a mayor got elected in that city, and she subpoenaed all pastor sermons in that city. Now, of course, that got shot down in court, and it went away. It's not there, and pastors didn't have to turn anything in. But there's been some attempts like this before, and I think the worrisome thing is that it's in Georgia. You know, it'd be one thing if we're hearing about this from California or New York or New Jersey,
Vermont,
you know, something like that. But for Georgia, with a Republican governor in place.
I don't know how much of a Republican he really
Maybe
is,
not.
Though.
Yeah, well, that's a relative term nowadays. But,
right.
Yeah,
right.
He's not a self-avowed liberal, so it's interesting.
It's right. It's why the whole thing I'm struggling. Several people sent me James Dobson's article on Trump, and did you look at it,
yeah,
David?
I saw that.
And he goes to the Supreme Court and all that. You know, that's the single greatest, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, what conservative judge hasn't turned on us?
Clarence Thomas.
Right?
He's the only one.
Right.
Yeah.
The rest of them are just, you know, just moving.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's what makes it difficult.
So with a pastor like this, is it the proper response for him to say no? I mean, if this were one of us, then my initial thought would be, well, it doesn't really matter. We put everything on sermon audio anyway, so go listen to it for yourself. But I get the idea that he has the freedom of speech, but in the biblical concept of obeying magistrates and those that have authority over you, I mean, should he be complying at all with this?
The idea of turning them over?
Yeah. The idea of, okay, this is what I've preached.
Well, I like the idea if it's on the internet.
Well, I mean, that would be the case for us, and so, I mean, if it ever came down to one of the pastors in this room, be like, well, I don't have notes, but it's kind of all on the internet, you could hear it anyway. But if we weren't in that position and it were private recordings that we kept in a file...
So does Romans 13 apply to this?
That's what I'm asking.
I would say no. Because I think I can maintain my God-given right of freedom of speech, and I can still submit to the authority of the government of, hey, if you want to arrest me, arrest me. You know, it's like we've talked about before. If they come out and say, you may not preach against homosexuality, well, I'm not going to obey that command. I'll preach it, and then I'll submit to your authority. Go ahead and take me to jail. Right, so I don't have to obey your ungodly order, but I will submit to your authority when it comes down to it.
How is that an ungodly order?
Well, I think if it violates the Word of God, I think you can make a pretty clear argument that it's an ungodly command.
Violates the rights that he's given by the federal government, saying that he has the freedom of speech. So they're trying to infringe on that, saying, you know, give us your sermon manuscript so we can scrutinize them, so we can then turn around and punish you for what you believe.
Well, and we want to rank right, I mean, you know, the Constitution spells that out, that those rights are God-given rights, which trumps your federal government, right? Yeah, you know, we don't get our freedom of speech from the federal government.
It says, shall not be infringed.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're unalienable rights. Now, I'm not saying they can't attack us for that, but that would be my defense on something like that.
And it almost seemed like in the way this played out, that's what he was trying to do. Because he initially handed over sermons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, yeah, I'd be more than happy to comply with what the government asked me.
Then he was like, no, I'm not going to give you more ammunition.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's certainly within constitutional law as well. You don't have to do anything, say anything that incriminates yourself.
Right. You know, and we don't, I mean, the part of this is we don't know what his contract looks like. We don't know if there were provisions in the hiring process of you can't do this and this and this. I can't imagine they sat him down and said, well, if you're going to take this job, you can't go preach in a church. I mean, I don't think that happens in a job interview. But, you know, maybe there's some fine print in the contract that says you can't work for another entity. I don't know.
But he's a lay pastor,
yeah,
so
exactly.
He wasn't even working
for him. Yeah, it's not even
not he's
even
not
that.
Getting a salary.
Yeah.
But is there a conflict in interest when he's the director of health services for the state of Georgia, and then I hear that he's preaching against homosexuality?
Is his doctorate a medical doctorate? I mean, that he is a medical doctor? Is that who this is?
I don't know.
Because, well, just looking on what the article provides, it says that he was the director of the city's public health department for, I guess, Pasadena, where he was invited for that commencement speech. And that's, okay, a commencement speech that's going to be probably, what, May of 2014? And then right after that, he's then in Georgia applying for this other job with a health department. So it's either the political arena that bureaucracy is, or he's actually would be considered a medical professional, where he should be qualified regardless of what he believes or would teach at a pulpit in his local church.
I think it all, like Steve said, he's only been on the job for a week, so it's not like we have a history of him bucking the system and teaching against what company policy is. You know, if that was going on, we might have a different discussion. But I mean, you know, think about soldiers in the Department of Defense right now. You know, the policy of, you know, transgender stuff and homosexual stuff is a lot different from when you guys were in. And, you know, there was more freedom to maybe say some things than there is now. Do soldiers have to make a choice of, can I never say anything about God because now I've got a target on my back? Or what we would say is, you know, you stand for your faith. I mean, I think there's some parallels.
Right, and I guarantee you, David, that, like, we have a couple battalion commanders. A battalion commander is a commander of 400 soldiers, some as many as 900. Well, you know, they're not allowed to get up in front of the battalion and say homosexuality is a sin.
Right.
They can't say men are men and women are women. Right. You know, they can't do that anymore. So I promise you there is a degree to which those kind of people are not teaching Sunday school classes. They're not teaching Bible studies. They are closed mouths in the church because there is a concern that a soldier from their battalion or a sister battalion could wander into a Bible study, and there is Battalion Commander John Brown who is reading from Romans chapter number 1, Romans chapter number 2, and now he's got this, ooh, what am I going to do with this? You know, and they would be, a soldier could come here on Sunday, hear a commander on Fort Bragg giving a lecture on that, and issue a complaint to the Inspector General, IG, on Fort Bragg, and there would be a substantial investigation.
Yeah, so I guess my point on that is we've got, there are plenty of Christians working for organizations that support anti-Christian perspectives. So, you know, why can this guy not do that? And
because he opened his mouth.
Yeah, well, then that's what we don't have here.
It was probably someone headhunting from California that followed him to Georgia.
Maybe.
Because based on the timeline in 2014, it seems like it was right there together.
He has a medical degree and a doctorate in public health.
Yep.
Both.
So, I mean, that's it's legitimate background. I mean, he didn't get that off the internet, you know? I mean,
he was also, from earlier it says he was appointed to President Obama's Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. As well, back in the day, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. But anyway. He must not know about his beliefs there.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you're going to get appointed to a council when you have a belief that this behavior is sinful and that the cause of this behavior can be eliminated by changing behavior. Mm-hmm. You know.
Except for the climate has drastically changed even in the last 5 years.
True.
So, you know, back then it might not have been seen as much of a conflict of interest as it's just a glaring one now. And that's what I was going to say. Yes, it's a conflict of interest if you ask the right people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ask those that want to forward this agenda, if you ask those who are more liberal and bent, they're going to say it's a conflict of interest. Why? Because they don't want any dissenting voices. But if you ask the founders of this country who believed in dissenting voices and dialogue, then it would be okay for two guys to get up and really vehemently go at it. In fact, sometimes even duel, maybe, with like actual pistols.
Andrew Jackson would.
And then still kind of respect each other and be friends.
Well, I think Brian might be onto something in the sense that he irritated the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody got offended, and all it takes is an accusation at that point.
Just think of all the scandals and things. That's all how it always is. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the situation gets their feelings hurt.
Yeah, and the accusation doesn't even have to be close to being true. Mm-hmm. It just has to be an accusation that gets blown up, and that's right. Maybe that's what we've got going on here.
Yep.
Yeah. You find out anything else, Steve?
I was looking on firstliberty.org, and they actually have a copy of the voicemail that the state officials, they called to fire him. When they called to fire him, he didn't. They left a voicemail, and it said they thought the voicemail had ended, and so they were all laughing and making jokes and saying, "Yeah, he's out, you're out." But they have a copy. I was gonna play it here.
Yeah, play it.
That's nice.
Wow.
Dr. Walsh, this is Dr. Patrick O'Neill and Mrs. Kate Furman, our CFO here at the Department of Public Health in Georgia. Sorry that we've not been able to reach you by phone. We will be sending you a letter, so be on the lookout for that. Thanks very much. Hope to hear from you soon. Bye-bye. I thought that through. It's going to just not. There's no warm way to say it.
on speakerphone.
They're on speakerphone.
There's no warm way to say this. You're out.
Anyway. Yeah.
High quality recording.
Well,
I would imagine that'll help him immensely in his court case.
It should, but depends on what kind of judge you get, I guess.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
They're going to paint the picture that he's not qualified to oversee a department with such conservative views.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, he couldn't possibly hold these views and oversee the department, but anybody else could hold whatever views they want, and they'll be totally fine. You just can't hold those views.
That's right.
Which is the troubling part of this whole thing.
Right. Yeah. Tolerance, progressivism, liberalism, those are the qualities that make you the best potential leader.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a current new assault. I believe it's on Kenya and their health department and their official government stance on how to defeat AIDS and stuff. Because we would consider it biblical, and you know, they consider it, you know, backwards and outdated, and you know, their view on homosexuality and the health risk of the behavior. And you know, I just heard somebody on the radio just running down Kenyan policy.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, you know, this is Bible policy. I mean, this is like wisdom from the Word of God that they're, you know, abstinence and monogamy and all those bad words, you know?
Yeah.
Those days are over with, John.
It's just going to get worse.
Right. Those days are absolutely over
with. Now it's free condoms.
And so be very careful, because what they're going to do is they're going to lump this into the group of human rights. So they're going to come out and say that the Kenyan government is involved in suppressing the rights of its nation.
That's just true. Like if you ever try to limit any kind of abortion, even if you did say, okay, can we at least say not after 20 weeks, you know, something like that?
Yep.
Well, you're infringing on women's reproductive rights.
That's right.
Yeah. It's not killing a baby. It's women's reproductive rights.
Right. And that's why, like, the first, 10 minutes of that debate, it was just talking points, something he memorized, but Donald Trump did a great job of saying, when you pull out the baby out of the womb and it's halfway out and you kill it, it's not okay with me. Now, I don't know if he believes it or not, but what we got was a national image of what actually goes on at times.
Hillary said that doesn't happen, John.
She's wrong.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our thoughts. What are yours? Thanks for listening. Have a great day.